Recorded live in the Phantasmo Lounge, high atop the Lisa 48 building in beautiful Midtown Portsmouth, Virginia, it's Phantasmo After Dark, with your host, Rob Floyd, and co-host, Phyllis Floyd. Tonight's topic, the arena. Well, hey everybody, welcome back to the old podcast here. I think we're back on schedule now. Hey, Phyllis.
Hey, Rob, how are you?
Same as I've been all day long. You know, I don't think we have anything coming up to promote. Any events coming up in the next week or so, anyway?
No, not within the next week or so.
Yeah, a week or two after that, we've got some stuff coming up, but we'll get to that in the next podcast, I guess.
Indeed.
Tonight, we're talking about the Pam Grier movie, The Arena, which is one I've kind of wanted to talk about for a while, but I hadn't seen it. It's one of those that I'd wanted to see and talk about because I love Pam Grier, and hell, we could do a whole episode just on Pam Grier and all her movies and do a nice overview. Maybe we'll do that sometime.
Maybe we should do a presentation on that at one of the cons.
Hey,
that'd be cool.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
That'd be awesome. But this particular one is kind of an oddity in her filmography because it's a period piece. And I didn't know that going in. I thought it was just, you know, like a women in prison and a fighting movie, but it actually takes place in ancient Rome. And we'll get to the plot and stuff in a minute, why that's really funny and the way it works out. But a couple of odd things about this is Pam Grier gets second billing, but I think I know why, though.
Oh, did you figure it out?
Yeah, I think I figured it out. It vexed me when we were watching it.
It vexed me as well.
Yeah, because she's definitely the bigger name.
Yes,
the only name really in it that we know.
Well, I wondered if she was the bigger name then, and I wasn't sure. I mean, she's obviously bigger name now.
I thought this might have been like real early in her career, but actually she had done about 7 films before this.
Right. And who was the other star?
Margaret Markov.
Right.
And I'm guessing the reason why is they had done Black Mama, White Mama together.
Yes.
2 years earlier, which was a pretty big hit at the time.
Right.
See, The Arena's in 74, Black Mama, White Mama was in 72. And in that, Pam Grier got top billing.
Oh.
So I'm guessing
Maybe they just flopped it?
Just to be fair, you know, okay, yeah. You got top billing in that one, she gets top billing in this one.
Yeah.
I'm guessing. The whole thing was shot in Italy, so it has more of that kind of European feel to it. Mm-hmm. And like all European movies, especially back then, it was shot with no sound. And everything was dubbed over in post.
There are moments when that is glaringly obvious.
When you know it's not Pam Grier's voice.
Yeah.
And there's sometimes
even just Pam Grier.
Oh, yeah, everybody. And there's sometimes where you're thinking, well, that might be her dubbing her own voice. But you know. Even everything from every sound effect was done by hand.
Yeah.
In this. But getting back to how this fits into her career. Like I said, she'd done about 7 films before this. And she had made a name for herself. So this is kind of an odd, like I said, when her name was second in the billing, it kind of threw me,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I don't think she did anything else like this that I can recall. She did a couple Supernatural things, you know, Blackula Scream.
Right.
You know? But no historical, if you want, or period movie like this. And it's really kind of light on that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just like the setting, okay, here's the setting, here's the sets, let's go.
Yeah.
They don't go into any historical stuff. They're not being super accurate with the costumes.
Definitely not. There were some cool costumes, though.
Oh, yeah. The girls look good. The only thing that, from what I was doing research on, I found out all the weapons, though, were real.
Which is kind of terrifying when you think about it.
And nobody got hurt during
Amazing.
Filming. Yeah. Most of the actresses, at least the two leads anyway, did all their own stunts just about. And they wanted to, you know, but they had to because they didn't have enough budget either. But most of the people, the people that would tire doubles,
yeah.
the people they were fighting against, most of them were stunt
yeah,
people.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, they knew what to do and they taught them. It was safe from that angle. But the fighting's not bad. I mean, there's a couple of the girls that are like, okay, you're fighting like a girl.
Yeah.
You know, you're just slinging, flopping that sword around.
The basic idea to this movie is it's what, like you said, ancient Rome and they have gone around and
captured
slaves or they bought slaves or whatever.
Yeah.
And of course they have, you know, arena gladiator fighting. And so they have the girls all working around the kitchen and serving the men and, you know, being nighttime playmates for the men and whatever. And then somebody decides one day to try and spice things up a bit that we're going to put a couple of the girls into the arena and have them fight it out.
Wow.
Right. And I will say that most of the fights with just the girls one-on-one in the arena were really pathetic. But later when they make their escape, the fighting was much better.
Yeah.
You know, when the girls were just full on fighting the guys and whoever else, it was much better to me. At least I thought it was.
Well, you know, that could be that as the, if they shot,
just got better.
They got better as they went on from, you know, training or whatever.
Yes.
And Pam Grier swinging that trident around and it was kind of cool.
That was pretty awesome.
Yeah, you know, that was neat.
With the net.
Yeah, with the Planet of the Apes. Now, yeah,
yes, indeed.
You know. always comes back to Planet of the Apes.
And it will later.
It will. Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute. Oh, got to throw in there, this is a Corman film.
Yes,
a Corman-produced film and directed by Mark Damon, who is also the co-producer, which figures into the story that he and Margaret Markov started dating during the film and ended up getting married when the film was wrapped and are still married to this day.
Yes, indeed.
Cheers to them.
Well, and it's a good thing that apparently he didn't want her in the film. He was going to hire an Italian actress.
Oh, yeah, because they were shooting the whole thing in Italy, and they wanted the name recognition to sell there.
Right, so I thought it was pretty funny that he was totally against having her come over and do this because he didn't want to have to pay for her. And Roger Corman said, no, I really want to because of the success of Black Mama, White Mama.
Yeah, they wanted to bank on that.
I really want to have her. I want to have her.
Yeah, because that would sell it through drive-ins throughout the States.
Right.
You know?
Right. And he said, no. Finally, he gave in and said, if you want her, then you have to pay for her salary. And then called back later and said, okay, if you want to have her, we'll split the salary to have her in there. So it's a good thing because he met his wife.
Yeah.
Which is pretty funny.
Yeah. And it worked out, you know, and because this was apparently, you know, a big hit too.
Yeah.
And during that time in the drive-ins, the Grindhouse era, you know, circuit and all that.
It always amuses me to hear about movies that I really... Honestly, I didn't know much at all about this movie.
Yeah.
But to hear him say this was a very successful picture for them, you know, it was a pretty big hit. I was like, wow, okay, it was a big hit, but I had no idea what this was.
Well, you know,
and I know it's been years.
Well, not just that, but it's the state of the industry has changed so much.
So much, yeah.
Because when movies in the 70s and before, I'll just use the 70s because that's when this came out, movies didn't open nationwide.
Right.
Yeah, there wasn't like Guardians of the Galaxy is coming out in a couple weeks and boom, it's open on the same day everywhere.
Right. No, they did it regionally.
It would be regionally. And there were chains, but there were more independent theaters or small chain theaters, you know.
Yeah.
And there was the Grindhouse circuit, there was the drive-in circuit, and there was the, you know, bigger theaters. And it would open, like a movie might open, say, in New York in January, and then it'll play its run there in that circuit in whatever regional area that is, and then those prints would move down the coast, you know, or move towards the west and would play in the mid region, and then it would get to the other coast, or it would start that way. In some places it might not even play, it might not get there, or a hacked print would get there by the time it made its way around. It might be missing some scenes or missing some frames, or it may have been, it depended on how much nudity was in the film or sex or even gore and violence, depending on where it was playing. Some individual theater owners would edit it themselves, which is a crime. But it's interesting, though. They'd edit it so it could play in their town, where it might not if it was that graphic.
Right.
And so that's why there's, in these Grindhouse-type films, there are different prints around. And you may have seen one print in your town that had all the gore, but somebody else says, I don't remember that. I didn't see that. You know, because they didn't see it. That's one of the things that fascinates me about this era of films is how they were marketed, how they were played, how they ended up, and who saw what. Movies like this were successful. They were successful like a flash in the pan. They made a lot of money, more than what it cost to make them. A lot of people went to see them, and they were gone. They didn't come back for return engagements, didn't keep playing. Like Texas Chainsaw, that was a very low-budget movie. It played the Grindhouse circuit, played the drive-ins. It was brought back, played again around, and people kept wanting to see it over and over. So it kept on playing places. It would be brought back every couple of years and go around the circuit and all until then the video era came out, and it was just a popular movie. The Arena and other movies like that, they made a lot of money. It was a success, but his definition of success is different. He made all his money back, made a lot of money on top of it, boom. Some other movies that Corman didn't do that well. So that definition of success he's using isn't the same as like for Chainsaw, which is still successful today. But that's why. Because there's other movies that were, you know, made some money and were a success on that circuit they played in, made all their money back, you know, and some extra. Now, oh, another thing about the arena, though, and movies of this type from that era, when they were brought back, or if they played in different markets, sometimes they had different titles. Or maybe the original title they were shooting under, and then it got re-released under a different title, or didn't get released under that title.
Right. Did the arena have a different name?
The arena had a different name.
Oh, what was it?
The Naked Warriors.
Naked Warriors. Yeah.
Now, I'm not sure if it got released under that title or if that was the working title. I can't remember that, but that was a legitimate title for it. And it's kind of funny because there's hardly any nudity in this movie at all.
Yeah. Compared to,
there's some.
Compared to many.
But you can't, this kind of gets lumped in with the women in cages.
Yeah.
You know, movies.
I guess because
the women
prisoners.
In prison movies because they're prisoners.
Right.
You know, and those movies typically, there's quite a bit of nudity.
Oh, but they had a shower scene.
Well, they got a car wash scene.
Where they throw buckets of water on them.
Yeah, in a lot of those movies, there's shower scenes, there's a sex scene, there's other scenes where there's fighting and their clothes get ripped off, you know. And that's the lure. That's the attraction of those movies, you know. In this one, there's only, like, I think two scenes. And they're real brief. There's two love scenes that happen kind of at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Well, and those really are show less than you do
exactly.
for most
well,
of
see,
the
that's
stuff.
What I'm saying.
It's
there's hardly
skin,
any.
But you don't
yeah.
see, like, actual genitalia or boob or anything.
Yeah. So. And then there's a scene where they first get sold mm-hmm. to the Roman. And they're like, clean these slaves, you know. And they rip their clothes off and they throw water on them and they soap them down with mops and stuff. And
it literally like a car wash.
Yeah, like a car wash, you know. And then they throw water and clean. And it's real brief. And the girls are trying to hide themselves because they're, oh, you know, they're modest. And, oh, no, I don't want to be, you know. So it's not a typical movie of this type that you'd expect. And I was actually expecting quite a bit more because of when this came out and where it fits in, you know. Other than not having a lot of nudity, it was still entertaining. Because, come on, let's face it. A Pam Grier movie in the 70s, you expect to see a lot of Pam Grier skin.
You do.
And you really didn't in this, but what you did was glorious, I must
Indeed.
Say.
Indeed it was. And, you know, they had a very cool costume where she has to come in and do the little dance thing. I don't
oh,
think
yeah, where
many
she entertains
people care
at that
about
party.
This, but I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, the kind of belly dance kind of costume
yeah,
with the feathers.
Yeah, with all the feathers. Yeah, it was
that
cool.
was pretty cool, yeah. But it was an entertaining film.
Yeah, it was.
You know, and I'd watch it again. And it'd be a great film to sit down with a bunch of people, watch at a party and stuff. It was a lot of fun. Another interesting thing about this is, and I have to go back and watch this to look at it and see what angles they're shot, the fights are shot at. Because one thing I read is they only built about a quarter of the arena set itself.
So you only see you never see the whole arena.
Yeah. And that always fascinates me when they have a small area to work in and you can move the camera in a bunch of different angles and make it look like it's huge. So I want to go back and watch it again and see if I can pick out that, no, that's the same spot every time, but it looks like it's different. The scene at the end, though, where they were going to the catacombs.
Oh, that was actually location.
That was actually catacombs, actually real ruins in Italy that they shot in.
Yeah, they were really cool.
Yeah, so that ended added a little bit of realism to it, you know. And that was pretty cool. Of course, at the end, and now it's the women, and at the end, some of the male gladiators are breaking free with them and fighting. And as they fight their way away, they keep getting killed off to where it ends up being just the two again.
Right.
Which it had to.
Oh, of course it did.
You know, it had to be just those two getting away together. I mean, you're almost not expecting it, though. I mean, you know it has to, but you're thinking, okay, they're all going to make it away together. Oh, that one got killed. One thing that was really interesting about this film, and it's because it was shot in Italy and because of the budget they were working with, it was cheaper to work with Italian extras and actors and stuff, is there were no character actors, or none of the regulars you see in these the blaxploitation or grindhouse films that keep showing up over and over.
Right.
Like Sid Haig was in a bunch of the Pam Grier movies and the Women in Cage movies. And some of the other actors like that. There were none of them in this. It was like Pam Grier, Margaret Markoff, that was it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a bunch of Italians that nobody's ever heard of over here. But it was fun. Here's where this falls in with Pam Grier's filmography, okay? Before this, she did Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, The Big Dollhouse, Women in Cages, Cool Breeze, Twilight People, The Big Birdcage, Hitman, Black Mama, White Mama, Coffee, Scream Blackula Scream, and then The Arena.
So, oh, I thought she did Coffee after this.
No.
She did before.
Coffee was the year before this, wow. Which was one of her biggest pictures.
Yeah, so now I'm even more confused why she didn't get top billing.
Yeah, well, I think it was just because
she just
they flipped it from the one before. Yeah, that's the only thing I can figure out.
You know, it probably didn't even matter to her, but it just sounded interesting. Yeah. I did.
But, you know, she had quite a bit of work under her belt before this movie, you know, and some stuff that made money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, Scream, Bellacula, Scream, Coffee, people still talking about those today, watching mm-hmm. them. The Big Bird Cage, Women in Cages, The Big Dollhouse, the trilogy there of the women in prison, all filmed in the Philippines, mm-hmm. those three. The Hitman, you know, Bernie Casey, Pam mm-hmm. Grier. A couple of the other ones I'm not that familiar with, Cool Breeze and The Twilight People I Need to See, and Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, of course, everybody knows that one. And right after The Arena, same year, The Arena came out in 74, Foxy Brown. Another one of her biggest pictures.
Right.
She was coasting.
Indeed, you know,
constantly
she was.
Working it back then. It was real good to see her a few years ago, you know, working again, getting a lot more work. You know, hey, God bless Tarantino for bringing her back in the spotlight with Jackie Brown.
Yeah, well, she's awesome. I mean, she's just a lot of fun to watch. She's always really good. I've never seen her in anything where I thought, ooh, that wasn't so great.
No. And, you know, people talking about, you know, we need, you know, strong, assertive women heroes and people to look up for these days, blah, blah, blah. You know, look up to and women who are strong. And
Pam Grier?
Have you ever seen Pam Grier on film? In the 70s, she was self-assured, strong, took care of business, took down the guys by herself. And there were other women like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've always been there, you know, and Pam Grier was one of the best.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they're not as many as there are now, but they were definitely out there.
Oh, yeah.
She's definitely on top.
Yeah, and there were a lot of movies, especially in the 70s, there were a lot of movies where women were taking charge, like the revenge pictures.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can say what you want about Day of the Woman or I Spit on Your Grave. You know, those are the two titles of that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's a misogynistic film and blah, blah, blah. Well, to a degree, but who's alive at the end?
Yeah. You know? Who gets revenge is his will.
Yeah. Who takes care of business? That's one of those movies where horrible, horrible stuff happens to that woman, but it has to for what she does to them to be that much more satisfying.
Right.
You know, there was those movies and there was other movies. There was one, I think one called Ginger where, God, I can't remember the actress's name. She was a grindhouse staple actress, but she was like I think I was a secret agent or something, but she took care of business, you mm-hmm. know, and was the lead, the star of the film, the Cleopatra Jones films, TNT, you know, Jackson. There were a lot of them out there. Yeah, maybe we ought to do a podcast just on that.
That's probably a really good one.
You know,
we'll cue that up for later.
Yeah. A lot of these movies, there's a handful of those I have not seen. I really would like to see mm-hmm. like the Cleopatra Jones sequel. I've never seen.
Oh, okay.
Cleopatra Jones, The Casino of Gold. And TNT Jackson, I've never seen. I'd love to see that, too. Quite a few of these are on Roku, by the way, if anybody out there is curious. But yeah, we'll have to do that. Be on the lookout for that one. That'll be another upcoming one in a while. Pam Grier, like I said, we do one on just her and all of her movies. Or we could do one on each one of her movies. That would carry us through. But this movie, you can get it. It's available on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
From the Corman collection.
Because you just got it.
I just got it recently.
Thank you, Jessica.
Yes, thank you, Jessica, for the wonderful birthday gift. Yeah, it's on the Roger Corman's Cult Classics set of discs, triple feature Lethal Ladies collection. And it's the Arena, Fly Me, and CoverGirl Models.
What was the last one?
CoverGirl Models.
Okay.
It looks
I haven't seen that.
It looks like Overgirl Models, the way that the font is on it. But it's worth it. I haven't watched the other two yet, but the disc is worth it for the Arena by itself. You know, from what I remember, it was a great print. You know,
oh, yeah.
Sharp.
I thought it was really good. You know, I remember at the beginning, and I forgot to look into this further, there was a note, you know, on the credits that said two short scenes were found or something that had been cut out of the film, and they added them back in for the print.
The quality changed slightly.
Yeah. And I forgot to
I remember noticing that, but getting caught up in the film, I don't remember what scenes they were.
Exactly. Yeah. I wish I had paid more attention to which ones they were, but I don't remember now.
But this is one, like I say, it doesn't fall into the, when people talk about Pam Grier movies, this isn't one that people talk about.
Right.
You know, you don't hear about it as much. You always get Foxy Brown, Coffee, Friday Foster.
Well, I mean, it kind of straddles a couple genres a little.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. They call it on the back of the box here, Gladiator Exploitation. which I don't recall that being a genre or a lot of movies from that.
They made their own.
Yeah, it falls into for me, I think of it more as blaxploitation / women in prison.
Right.
You know, it crosses those.
Kinda.
Yeah, a little bit. But if you like Pam Grier, like we do.
Indeed.
Like everybody should. and you have seen, you know, some of her movies, this is one you need to throw in under your belt. You need to watch this one. Like I said, it's easy to get. I don't think it's on any of the Roku, at least none of the ones that I've seen channels, but it is on Amazon. Easy to get. Order it. Watch it. It would be interesting to watch some of her films kind of in order,
mm-hmm.
to see how
her progression
and her acting got. Because, mm-hmm. you know, in some of them, early ones, of course, she's not as good an actress as she was later. Still stunning to watch. I think that's one of her main things. Like, she does have a great screen presence, a charisma. She stands out from everybody else. You know, she does. She draws your eye, which is one of the most important things. Now, you have to act, too, or else your eye's going to go back.
Yeah. You know? Well, she's got her very own charm. Like you said, stage presence. Definitely see, you notice her, you know, when she's on screen, you notice her.
She's quite striking.
Indeed. I mean, and not just her look. She has a presence.
If you get this disc, there's a great making of interviews, documentary, whatever you call it, interviews with Corman, Margaret Markov, who looks great today, by the way.
She does.
Mark Damon and a few other people that we got a lot of information that we're giving you from that, actually. And there's stuff that they're talking about that we didn't even begin to mention.
Yeah.
And it's well worth the watch.
Oh, yeah. I found it very enjoyable.
Yeah, it's not boring at all, like some of them.
I'm not normally crazy about watching interviews and making of, but I found that quite enjoyable. I think there's a commentary, too, which we didn't realize when we watched the film.
You know, we'll have to go back and watch that.
So we should go back and watch the commentary, or listen to the commentary.
Yeah, those are always fun.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes are fun. But I bet this one would be great. Probably lots of little inside info on what was going on at the time.
Yeah.
Definitely, if you're a Corman completist, get this. If you're a Pam Grier fan, watch it. I'll say it over and over. I can't say it was my favorite Pam Grier film.
No, but it was a lot of fun.
But it was enjoyable, and it was a nice change.
Yeah.
You know? The thing that really struck me funny was they're Romans, okay, at the very beginning.
Oh, I was just getting ready to say
that. And they're conquering, and they go and they get Margaret Markov's tribe of...
They're like Celts or something.
I mean,
they're all pagan type. They're doing like a pagan ritual.
Yeah, they're in white robes, and they're doing some kind of ritual out in the woods, and the Romans come in and get them.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's this African tribe.
Yeah, well, I mean, you only see, like, it's Pam. There's Pam, one female four or five other people. Four or five guys. They're playing drums, and she's dancing.
Where are they?
Yeah, well, I asked you that, and you said, oh, they're in African Rome.
They're across town in the African side of town. Where do the Romans get this?
I have no idea. Maybe I should do more research.
Did they go over to Africa and conquer? I mean, I don't know. Maybe by history. Maybe I don't know. But I'm thinking Italy's here, you know, and Rome is here. And I don't know. It just struck me as funny. It's like, man, they went a long way to get those people. But lucky for us, they did, or the movie wouldn't be nearly as good.
Indeed.
Once the fighting started, so.
Yeah. You know, I remember being confused right at the, you know, when they collected all the women and that they sold to the gladiators or to the whoever owns the arena. There were, what, five girls? I can't. There was one that was the drunk. And then there was
the cute redhead.
I can't remember.
Redhead
with the curls. Cute redhead. She was really cute.
Who couldn't fight for shit.
Yeah, like Lucinda or something.
Whatever.
I can't remember any of their names.
No. Oh. That's finish your thought, because speaking of names, that's something.
Well, the thing I was getting to was the Roman girl, because there was apparently a Roman girl who had been sold into slavery.
Oh, yeah.
And she confused me, because at first I didn't understand why there was a Roman girl that was a slave, when obviously all the other people who were slaves were from other places. But that actually came to play as part of the fight scene or whatever, when she gets chosen to go and fight. And she makes a point to tell everyone in the arena that she is a daughter of Rome. And then they were terrified. Oh. Yo, you can't put a Roman in the fights. So they made it so she wouldn't have to fight. Anyway, it was just...
Oh, okay. One interesting thing I found out...
The names?
Yeah. May not be interesting to anybody but me. In Pam Grier's movies, in over half of her movies, but at least the first six or seven...
Mm-hmm.
She only had one name. The character only had one name.
Oh.
And in a lot of her movies, you look at the credits, it's only listed one. There's only a name, either first name or last name.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until Black Mama, White Mama that the character had a first name and a last name.
Oh. Well, and then she went back to one name for this one.
Yeah, this one. And it goes
like Mimbawi or something? Or
Malawi or
something. Yeah, I can't remember.
And it flip-flops. Throughout her career, the character only had one name.
Yeah.
A lot of times. Huh. I thought that was kind of weird. Not that she needed a second name, because they only just call it, but usually a character will have it.
Yeah, you mainly
even when she
once.
Was on Love Boat. She had two Love Boat episodes. She had a first name and a last name. Yeah. If Love Boat could afford to give her two names.
It was not necessary for this.
Yeah. Oh, and also when she did Jackie Brown, the script, the character's name was Jackie Burke.
Oh.
And when Tarantino, when they cast her, he changed the name to Jackie Brown to kind of pay homage to Foxy Brown.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. I thought that was kind of cool. And she actually, the song, there's a theme to Jackie Brown. Oh, God, what's it called? Across 110th Street. Okay. Which is a theme song from Jackie Brown, is recorded in 1972. She sang backup on the original recording.
Oh.
So when it was used in Jackie Brown, she was singing backup on the song in the movie she was starring in. That was kind of cool.
That is cool.
I didn't know she had done any recording and stuff.
Hmm.
But apparently she did some other recording and stuff. The Big Dollhouse, she was, I guess, sang back up on song in that. Long Time Woman was the name of the song. And then, of course, in Jackie Brown. That thing, the song was used in that, too.
Interesting.
So that was kind of cool. Another thing I found out, when she was doing the Women in Cage movies in the Philippines... Well, I should say the Women in Prison movies, because the first one was called Women in Cages. And the Big Dollhouse, she contracted like a tropical disease.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And she like almost died, went blind for a few months, lost some of her hair.
Took her about months? Good Lord.
You know, for almost a month. Almost wow. a month, sorry. But it took her about a year to recover.
Wow,
so I don't think she filmed any other movies in the Philippines after that.
I think I would not.
Oh, another thing I found out, she's Rosie Grier, football player, was her cousin.
Oh.
From The Thing with Two Heads, which is another movie we should talk about at some point.
Add it to the list.
Yeah, there's really not a whole lot more to say about this movie. I mean, you know, it's one of those movies where it's a fun movie, and I think a lot of people should see it that like this type of thing, but it's not a big piece of art. There's not a whole lot going on in it, except that it's, if you like Pam Grier and you like Roger Corman, it's one of his better pictures, production-wise.
Well, essentially, this is female Spartacus on a low budget.
Yeah, and that was their idea.
Yeah.
That was the idea behind it. And, you know, if you liked Black Mama, White Mama, you liked Margaret Markov and Pam Grier together, well, here they are back, and that was the selling point of this movie.
Yeah, they do have a good chemistry.
Yeah. And here they are back together again, and it's chicks fighting. There's not a lot of nudity, like you would expect in a female fighting movie that goes into this genre. But other than that, it still is a fun watch.
Yeah.
And I'd watch it again, and I urge anybody else out there to watch it. I know I keep saying that over and over, but that's the whole point of this podcast, I think, is to get...
Go watch it.
Is to get people, you know, introduced to movies maybe they've not seen or heard of, give them a little information, and make you want to go see it, you know, or seek it out. And then if we meet together somewhere, we can talk about it. How cool the movie was. Because I'm all about that. But I think that's about all I've got on this. I don't know, you got anything else to add?
No. The only thing we can do is our little Planet of the Apes segment.
Oh, yeah.
Which you didn't get to do last episode.
I didn't get to do last time because it was just me on the old microphone here. But just to give a brief framing.
You tell
framing,
this every time.
Maybe somebody's first time listening, they're going, what the hell does that have to do with the movie they're talking about?
Okay.
We started this segment some podcasts ago where Phyllis gives me something that has to do with the podcast, whether it's a title, whether it's a movie related to it, whether it's an actor or something, and I have to relate it back to Planet of the Apes, like the 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon thing. Clayton and I started this The World Revolves Around Planet of the Apes years ago, many years ago, probably 20 years ago, long before the 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon, when we realized... 6 degrees?
Yes.
Whatever.
So.
When we did realize that everything connects back to Planet of the Apes one way or the other.
Right.
So here we go.
All right. Well, I'm going with Blaxploitation, not so much this particular movie, just to be
right
different.
On. I'm in.
And this should be easy. So how about Isaac Hayes?
Isaac Hayes connects to Planet of the Apes.
Yep. How?
Let's see. Okay. Isaac Hayes sang the theme to Shaft. I'm sure there's a quicker way to do this, okay? Isaac Hayes sang the theme to Shaft.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he did the whole soundtrack.
Yep.
He also did the song Bumpy's Lament. The guy that played Bumpy,
mm-hmm.
I can't think of the actor's name off the top of my head. He played Florida's new love interest on Good Times.
Okay.
After James died.
Right.
Okay. Moses Gunn.
Oh, that's the actor's Moses name? Gunn. Moses Gunn?
Yeah. On Good Times.
Mm-hmm.
James on Good Times, John Amos,
mm-hmm.
was on the first season of Mary Tyler Moore.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Ed Asner played Lou Grant on Mary Tyler Moore, also did a voice on the cartoon Gargoyles
mm-hmm.
that Marina Sirtis and Jonathan Frakes did from mm-hmm. Star Trek Next Generation. And once we get to Star Trek, it's a direct line to Apes.
Yes. Okay. And how many steps from that, what, two?
Yeah. And the direct line is, you get to Star Trek, you hit Mark Leonard, who was Urko on the Planet of the Apes TV show. So that's right. Their direct line. So there you go.
Very good.
You may say it was a stretch, but it's legit. It's a legit link. I stand by it.
Good job.
Thank you.
All right. I guess that's about it, huh?
All right. I think so. If you got anything to add, if I missed anything, if we got anything wrong, don't hesitate to call us on it. Check out the Phantasmo After Dark Facebook page. Drop us a line there. Or on the Phantasmo After Dark email, which is, what's that address, Phyllis?
PhantasmoAD@gmail.com.
That's PhantasmoAD@gmail.com. And also check out, right after the podcast goes up live, or semi-live, online, I will be posting pictures and trailers and stuff relating to this film on the Phantasmo After Dark Facebook page. So check it out for some pictures, interesting. Hopefully I can get some behind-the-scenes stuff. And definitely I'll put the trailer up and anything else I can think of that relates. So
cool.
Check us out there. That's it.
Sounds good.
Good night and thanks for listening.
Good night.